Handel.
Yeah. The water music. And, well, I thought this would be a nice background for Mrs. Dalloway. Well, good afternoon. Today I undertake what is for me a difficult thing. Because there are so many things I want to say that I fear this can get a bit chaotic. Well, I keep telling myself the aim of this podcast is to try and help a little bit all of you who are reading the book for our meeting next week. So, well, let's give it a go. Mrs. Dalloway takes place on a day in the middle of June. We are not in the middle of June yet, but by the time we have our book club gathering, we will be. So, maybe we could honor the novel on its 98th anniversary. That's the story's anniversary. The book was published 2 years afterwards, in 1925. And what do we know about this context, about this historical moment? 1923 was just after World War I, which means the context of the novel is not war circumstances, but the consequences of war. We've got the character of Septimus Warren, for instance, who has been a soldier in the war and who has shell shock. And we've got other characters being affected by the recent war as well. Well, the story unfolds in a day and covers an upper-class party as well as a suicide. So, this would be as to say that we have a shiny face and a dark face of the same coin. The fact that there is no narrative unit can easily frustrate the reader. This is something I understand. Yeah, I really want to empathize with all of you. All of you who had trouble, who fought hard to keep on with the reading. There were also those of you who just abandoned the reading because you found it too difficult. So, well, what I'm doing tries to throw some light onto the reading of what I think is a difficult novel. Well, to make things even a bit more difficult, I would like to refer to Mikhail Bakhtin's concept of polyphonic novel. Bakhtin was a Russian talking about the literature and about theory and about narrative. Polyphonic means many voices, and there are many voices in this novel. And not only the different characters' voices, but also different voices within one character. So yeah, we've got like voices everywhere. And as readers, we are kind of left with odd pieces of a wider scene rather than in front of solid characters who have clear ideas and know where they come from and where they are going to. Well, this is the age of fragmentation, right? I have covered this topic in many other occasions. Fragmentation after a wall that broke the whole world. All these fragments that were reality were also transferred into fiction. And, well, going back to Bakhtin, the voice of the narrative is permeated by different levels of language, by a diversity of speech. We've got Mrs. Dalloway, we've got the main storyline where Mrs. Dalloway, or Clarissa, is going to town to buy flowers and is thinking of the party she's giving this evening, and she's preparing everything. And while she thinks of the plans for the party, she keeps bringing back the past by way of remembering. And we also have like characters' consciousness dominating the narrative. First, Mrs. Dalloway, and then other characters. So it's not all the time a certain character telling us a story. This is maybe the most difficult thing when reading a book like this, a modernist book, for the first time. Virginia Woolf referred to a process she called tunneling process. She wrote about this in her diary, and she thought the tunneling process was narrating the past of characters when needed. Narrating the past of characters, linking that to history, linking that to context that could make the character deeper. So hence we have a main character who goes along in the story, but who keeps going back to the past in order to link memories to the present. So in terms of time, we kind of get lost, right? We can get lost. Instead of a plot, we could say there is a dialogue. But this dialogue doesn't really imply having characters talk. The dialogue can be a stream of consciousness. It can be Clarissa's thinking of this and that guest and buying ice or flowers and remembering what happened to her when she was 20. So this is more or less the same that happens to us every day when we enter the car and go to pick our children from school, and then we are thinking of our shopping list and some task we have to finish for tomorrow, and what are we going to do the next weekend. And then there is this song playing in the radio, and this brings memories to us, and then we are there like Mrs. Dalloway with many things going on in our heads. I think this is a clear example of what happens in this book. And well, at the beginning of the novel, we know that Clarissa, the main character, has recently recovered from an illness. So we are introduced to one of the topics of the novel. One of the topics of the novel and of life, which is death. Some other topics are, of course, life, mental and physical health, selfhood, identity, being in a body. These are some topics of the novel. Time, temporality, death as a kind of horizon of time. And place. I would say place is also an important topic, because the novel happens in London. And London, the sound of the different bells, the big bands and Margaret's bells and so on, is what seems to link all the characters appearing in the novel. We are constantly reminded that the bells mark the time. The big band is striking, the musical bells before each time the other bells strike. We've got St. Margaret's bells, we've got the leaden circles that dissolve in the air. This is something I find beautiful, but I also think it can be difficult for when you read it for the first time. The leaden circles is like, leaden is a very thick and heavy material. And yeah, it can be strangening to link leaden to a sound. But of course, when you're talking about bells, bells are made of iron or leaden or something like that. So the fact that the narrator is repeatedly telling us the leaden circles that dissolve in the air is another way of underlining the passing of time. It seems that internal speech slows down the time of the narrative, because the characters keep going back to the past and narrating their memories, while at the same time the bells are constantly striking, and this is a reminder of how quick time goes by. So two different times are blended together, and we could call them we could label them time of action and time of introspection. I know some people find this difficult, and some people get lost, and other people think this way of writing is boring. But I think it's also worth giving it a try. Well, this is why we are reading this book for our book club. Virginia Woolf was very much concerned about time. If we think of To the Lighthouse, for example, where we've got three chapters, two of them, the first and the last one, taking place in one day, and the chapter in the middle being a 10 years lapse. She was concerned about time, about the way we reflect on the passing of time, the way time marks us, as well as the way history marks us. We can think of the waves as well. In the waves, we've got all these chapters beginning with a moment in the rising and setting of the sun. And we can also think of Virginia Woolf's last novel, Between the Acts, where we see what happens and what people think and what people do between the acts of a play. Well, she was concerned about time, and I think time is one of the most relevant issues in this novel. The opening line of the novel is, Mrs. Dalloway said she would buy the flowers herself. And what are flowers but an ephemeral, almost dead decorative object? I think the flowers are a perfect metaphor for death, although they are pure, beautiful decorative objects for the party. And they are a symbol of life because they come from a plant. But she's not going to buy plants. She's going to buy flowers. The flowers are these cut stems from a plant. So here we've got like a mix of life and death. Let's see what flowers she mentions. She at the beginning, I think it's page 7 or 8, she says, delphinium, sweet peas, bunches of lilac, carnations, masses of carnations, and there were the roses, there were the irises. We could see each of these flowers as a symbol. I don't know if we have to go deeper into this topic, but well, delphiniums, for example, is a very beautiful kind of large flower that gives lots of color. Sweet peas, by contrast, is a very delicate, tiny one. Well, we can think about the flowers in our book club discussion. The party itself could be seen as the symbol for life. And then we find Septimus Warren's character, Septimus Warren's suicide being reported in the party. So life and death, all the time, life and death. In a similar way, light and colors could stand for life, while the blinds drawn towards the end of the novel, or the putting out of the light could stand for death. This is an element that appears also in To the Lighthouse. In my podcast about that novel, I refer to that, like putting out the candle as a symbol for death. In a previous draft of Mrs. Dalloway, Virginia Woolf had been considering that Clarissa would commit suicide. But it was Septimus Warren, in the end, who committed suicide in what is the novel nowadays. And one question we could ask ourselves is Septimus Warren a kind of double, a counterpart for Clarissa? He is described as a character who suffers from terrible shell shock. This is something that happens to many soldiers after having experienced war. And there is an implicit contradiction between feeling nothing or being unable to feel as a kind of psychological protection, I think, when someone has gone under terrible situations, there is this need, I think, to protect oneself and to feel nothing. And the contradiction goes between feeling nothing or feeling too much, as we are told Mrs. Dalloway does. So we've got some contradictions already, right? Life and death, the slowing down of time and the quickly passing of time, being unable to feel or feeling too much. And when Clarissa thinks about her feelings, and she does this most of the time, one of the topics that comes to the surface is the topic of identity. Clarissa states at the beginning of the novel that she feels invisible. We could ask ourselves, is she absorbed by the crowd? Is she kind of absorbed by her party throwing and going around town very busy, like doing everything for a party? On page 187 in my edition, which is Penguin Popular Classics, there is this sentence. Every time she gave a party, she had this feeling of being something not herself. She seems to feel at ease when she walks around the streets busily and going to shops and so on. And she actually says, I love walking in London. She says that at the beginning. So maybe she found a refuge in the streets. But then we know of this feeling of invisibility. So another question could be, is maybe her feeling of invisibility linked to her identity construction. And then we've got the topic of naming. Well, we know the main character's name is Clarissa, but she's also Mrs. Dalloway. And this is an imposed by marriage name, something she adopts when she marries Richard Dalloway. But is this adopting of a name something that changes your personality? We could think about that, about the names the characters have always mean something. Well, and then we've got this other fact that she seems to be in her mind most of the time, so the issue of embodiment could be another issue to be discussed. Are all these characters only in their minds, or do they have a body? The relation between embodiment and the flight of the mind is something present in most of Virginia Woolf's novels, I would say. And, well, I'm going to quote something. All this must go on without her, but somehow, in the streets of London, on the ebb and flow of things, she survived. Well, this she is maybe the unseen part of us that she mentions. We would think, what is this unseen part of us? Is she referring to the soul? Is she referring to the mind? Is Mrs. Dalloway concerned with disappearing, with dying, and with this thing that can survive us? And we could also ask ourselves, is Mrs. Dalloway wishing to flee, to escape her reality? In terms of identity and of being in the body or being present, we could also ask ourselves, is any of the characters in Mrs. Dalloway present, in time present? Or are they all in the past, in their memories, in their projections and plans for the future? So time again. How does Mrs. Dalloway feel when she knows she has not been invited to the lunch her husband has been invited to? Does she feel she is invisible when she feels rejected or not invited? Yeah, I know I am like asking many things, but yeah, these questions are intended for our discussion. Does Clarissa have a sense of identity when she's remembering things, or do memories dislocate her? I think the issue of depth and superficiality arises here. The notion of superficial is present in the novel because it's about a party and about giving, throwing this party for these superficial people who are going to come. But there is a dialogue, a kind of dialogue between superficiality and depth. And also about formalities and real, true communication. We could argue that there seems to be no fluid communication among the characters that populate the novel. We have Peter Walsh and Clarissa, who could have married, but she married Richard instead. And on page 103, 104, more or less, in my edition, always in my edition, Clarissa says, communication is health, communication is happiness. And yet, how is the communication the characters have in the novel? Is anyone, like, communicating successfully? Yeah, we could ask this. And then there is the social aspect of it all, right? Mrs. Dalloway's party is a party of the British elites. We are told that even the Prime Minister is a guest at the party. And we can see how formalities prevent true communication from happening. We see how much importance it is given to appearances. And yet, Mrs. Dalloway seems to have this feeling of regret, feeling of insatisfaction. There is no sincere communication. And, well, we could ask ourselves, is the author being just descriptive? Is there a shadow of social critique in this aspect? Because we have, for instance, the fact that Peter Walsh has been living in India for many years. India was still a part of the British Empire when the novel was written. And through Peter we see, on the one hand, a colonialist behavior of some of the characters in the novel. For example, he needed to order gardening tools, books from England, as if there were no of these civilized objects in India. Does this imply a kind of civilizing gesture? I would say Peter Walsh is a colonialist character, but well, we can discuss that. The context of the party also shows us how out of context the upper class in Britain was with everyday life in India. This is with the people they were oppressing. And I think there is a relevant fact here, something we can mention. And it's that Leonard Woolf, Virginia Woolf's husband, had published The Village in the Jungle, a novel in 1913. And this novel was based on his experiences as a colonial civil servant in British-controlled Ceylon, well, what is nowadays Sri Lanka. This was written from the perspective of the native rather than from the colonial point of view. So, well, Virginia Woolf and Leonard Woolf were acquainted with all these topic, right, this colonialist topic. So, and then, well, going back or keeping track with Peter Walsh, we could ask, is he an immature person? Is he a social failure? Well, apart from him being in love or having been in love with Clarissa, the novel gives us several references that portray him as a possessive man. He's mainly described in relation to his possessions, like his pen, knife, his pen, his this, his that. We are told that he made terrible sins, probably related to his jealousy. And he seems to have this kind of, well, this sense of entitlement to things and to people. There is this flashback around pages 70 something, where he tells Clarissa, tell me the truth, tell me the truth, tell me the truth. What do you think this means? What truth did he want to know? And what is she's hiding from him? Some other topic, the topic of space. The whole book, the whole novel takes place in the city of London, and it's marked by the Big Ben striking each hour, and by the references to the streets of London, and this is what seems to link the different characters, because we know about Septimus Warren in the party, but he is not an acquaintance of the people in the party, so the city of London could be considered a character. Well, yeah, if a place can be a character, could be considered an issue in the novel. And then, well, we've got so many other things we could consider, but I prefer to stop here. And well, I'm really looking forward to seeing you next Wednesday and discuss the book with you. Thank you very much for listening to me.